You're up, we're up, it's the perfect match. Now it's on you to make the right decision while you're scrolling in bed. Cool off with a refreshing large Big Gulp drink at 7-Eleven. Cold, refreshing, and made the way you like it. It's available at 7-Eleven and just 59 cents with 7 rewards. Visit your local Columbus 7-Eleven and satisfy that craving today. Valid through 6/23/26. While supplies last, participating stores see app for full terms.
CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College. He's traveling. He's in Bucharest. We turn to the pending election in Ecuador. You will recall that Ecuador, under President Lasso, was one of the remaining parts of the Americas, South America in particular, that was not left of center, the so-called pink tide. President Lasso is stepping aside after pressure from the Congress to impeach him. Other troubles in the small country. Now, major trouble. Rafael Correa, I read from the Financial Times reporting out of Bogota. Rafael Correa, the convicted former leftist president of Ecuador, is attempting to regain power through an ally in early elections to be held this summer as the country, Ecuador, grapples with an escalating crime wave. 8 candidates are gearing up to compete for the presidency in the August vote, triggered by the dissolution of Congress. Correa's chosen candidate, Luisa Gonzalez, became the early frontrunner thanks to his endorsement. Professor, I've learned of Correa secondhand. He lives in exile, I'm told, in Europe. He's married to a European. At the same time, he floats over Ecuador, and indeed this whole region, as a shadow of corruption and violence. This report from the Financial Times promises worse ahead. Is that how to read this? Thank you.
It certainly does appear that way, John. And as you pointed out, Ecuador, in part its strategic significance derived from the fact that it's one of a limited number of countries in South America that is receptive to working with the U.S. So a little bit of background on Rafael Correa. Of course, going back to the early 2000s, he was part of that first wave of radical left-oriented leaders that began with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela and also Evo Morales in Bolivia. But around the same time, you had in 2006, 2007, Rafael Correa coming in from Ecuador. Now, Correa had a combination of a certain amount of intelligence. He's got a PhD, I believe, in economics. At the same time, he had a father who basically was imprisoned for the majority of his adult life on narcotics charges in the United States and ultimately died. And so Correa came in with a combination of a dedication to a more radical leftist project and a deep bitterness towards the United States. And for a decade, he took Ecuador in that direction, in part using Chinese funds, but also opening up a raft of corruption in a country that prides itself on its institutions. Now, he left power to his vice president, Lenin Moreno, thinking that Moreno would continue the legacy. Instead, Moreno tried to move in a centrist direction to unleash himself in Ecuador from the dependency on China and the dependency on radical leftism. And at the end of the day, when Moreno himself left power, Ecuadorians chose to go with a rightist candidate, Guillermo Lasso, rather than return a Correa acolyte to power. And so where we're at now is that while it seemed that Ecuador was thus going in a more center-left direction, Ecuador has had just an array of different problems. It's almost the four horsemen of the apocalypse in combination. You've had the violence that has come from finding itself between two major drug producers, Colombia and in Peru. You've had corruption scandals, which at the end of the day, forced the current president, who was seen as relatively incapable of addressing the country's problems, forced him to basically call for early elections, invoking an obscure clause in the Constitution called the double death or the muerte cruzado. And so with this early election, which is going to be August 20th, again, in that sense of frustration of Ecuadorians with the situation, with corruption, with political chaos, with violence. You now have, as you pointed out, a candidate who is seen as is relatively young and clean and charismatic, but is closely tied to Correa, Luis Gonzalez of his Citizens Revolution movement, heading in. But as you also pointed out, there are a number of other different candidates. You have everyone from the businessman and son of one of Ecuador's wealthiest banana magnates, Alvaro Noboa, to a person who is actually a leader in anti-corruption, who actually riled against Chinese corruption, Fernando Villavicencio, to a former vice president of Lenin Moreno, Aru Solzenholzer, to an indigenous leader, Yaco Perez. And so at the end of the day, although it appears that Luisa Gonzalez could be the one who wins in this chaotic environment, I suspect that we're going to be following this very closely in the coming weeks to see really, you know, who comes out on top in the midst of Ecuador's deep problems and frustrations.
We go to Bolivia, but I ask before we look at the troubles Reuters identifies, the sinking economy. Correa, does he work with Morales of Bolivia? Morales is out of office also, but he floats around in the Andean chain like the angel of death. Are Correa and Morales allies, simpatico, or enemies? Is there a way to characterize their relationship?
Muy simpáticos, John. Yeah, the issue was that even though each of those classic radical leftist authoritarian leaders had different agendas and different styles, certainly Evo Morales was much more of a cocalero, much more of a sindicalista, whereas Rafael Correa had more of an ideological bent, but there was that collaboration and arguably continues to be that collaboration among the radical left seeking to return its movements in different countries to power.
Bolivia. This is Dateline La Paz, Reuters. Bolivia's economic miracle, a boom in the 2000s and 2010s that saw years of state spending lift millions of people into the middle class, is creaking, a warning sign to the wider region battling high inflation, shrinking government coffers, and tepid growth. I mention this, Professor, because the Andean chain that I'll begin with, Ecuador, Bolivia, and Peru, and we add Chile, but I'm going to set aside Chile for the moment. They're all troubled by governance issues. Peru, we've evidenced that over time, and now Bolivia as well. I mentioned Morales. Is he a bad actor in all of these states, or just it's my romantic sense that he's a gang man who will go where the money is good? How does he fit into the present Bolivia?
Well, John, first of all, understanding that in Bolivia, which depending on who you count is 50 to 70% indigenous, the Amaira and various other groups. And so really when Morales came to power back in 2006, he rallied not only traditional cocoa producers, but also leveraged that indigenous identity, the sense that indigenous being so powerful in Bolivia had been excluded from power. And so Morales was part of that initial group of radical leaders. And certainly his power has been very strong in Bolivia. He's also stirred up trouble in neighboring Amaira-heavy areas of Peru, working with Peru's ex-leftist leader Pedro Castillo, as we've talked about in previous weeks. His broader appeal in the region is probably somewhat limited just because his base really is within those indigenous groups in Bolivia. But certainly Morales continues with the president, who is heavily influenced by him, Luis Arce, in Bolivia, in that role. But as you also pointed out, John, a key thing that's happening across the continent in various governance of various levels of capability is, with all the problems from COVID-19, with all of the problems from the inflationary effects of Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, governments are turning left and right to statist solution, from Gabriel Boric in Chile to Evo Morales in Bolivia to Gustavo Petro in Colombia, among others. And part of the risk of that is that a decade ago when commodity prices were high. Bolivia is sitting on a ton of minerals and also a lot of natural gas. And so during those boom times, leaders like Lula in Brazil, his first time around, took advantage of the boom in Brazil. Evo Morales, during his time in Bolivia, took advantage of high gas prices to have a lot of income coming in to do things that, that kept him popular. The problem in Bolivia now is that not only are gas prices down, one of the, again, major sources of income for the statist Bolivian economy, but also because of neglect of the gas sector in state hands for so long. They've really been kind of milking all the production they could without putting money back into keeping production up. Gas production is down. So that double whammy of fallen prices and a fallen production means that Bolivia's cash cow is not what it used to be. And that's been creating some major problems for Bolivia's foreign currency earnings. And so as they basically try to prop up their currency and they're running out of money, they've been selling off their gold reserves. And so suddenly in Bolivia, among its many other problems, people have been having a difficult time getting dollars. And because they haven't been able to get dollars, that's started to create some major problems for the economy, as well as some worries for shop owners and just people living in the country.
Too many villains, too little time. We go to Lima, Peru. Reuters, Peru's land dedicated to the cultivation of coca leaves grew 18% to record highs in 2022, the government anti-drug chief said, notably in protected lands and indigenous Amazon villages close to the borders with Brazil and Colombia. I mentioned also that Colombia's reporting increased violence in the southwest in territory that is associated with indigenous people, but this is fighting by what look to be elements of the old FARC. So coca's back in the news. Cocaine's back in the news. Do I presume correctly that the news that the land devoted to coca crop in Peru has increased by 18% is bad news for the government, Evan?
It is, John, because it means that you have a more illicit income and more illicit money flowing throughout the economy, which hurts corruption, which creates all kinds of problems. As you pointed out, this has been a problem throughout the core Andean coca-growing region in Bolivia, in Peru, and in Colombia. And those things have flourished where state control has been weak. And oftentimes it's been weak because you have groups that are there, sometimes leftist groups such as Sendero Luminoso in Peru, sometimes others that are taxing the cocoa trade as well as protecting it from the government. What had happened in Peru, though, importantly, is that you had certain areas that were associated with the guerrillas. It used to be a place called the Upper Huallaga Valley. They made some progress there. And then the core cocoa growing area used to be a place called the intersection of the Mantaro, the Apurimac, and the Eni River valleys, famously called the Vrine. But even though it continues to be a problem there, which is one of the areas where the remnants of the Shining Path continue to be located. It started popping up in other areas as well. So in the north of Peru, which traditionally wasn't a cocoa-growing area, spillover from Colombian guerrilla groups, basically between the Napo River and the border land there with Colombia, Colombian groups started growing cocoa there in the north and moving it into Brazil. And in addition to that, to the east of the Vrime that we just mentioned, in a place called Ucali, where you also have a lot of illegal timber and things like that, it's taken off there, also moving into Brazil. There's also some cocoa growing in the relatively illegal mining-rich area in the south of Peru in places like Puno and Madre de Dios. But the bottom line is with all the political chaos in Peru and all the difficulties in these areas, in places that traditionally weren't major cocoa-growing economies, you're beginning to see cocoa crops sprout up. And again, that means more illicit money on top of the illicit money that comes from logging, on top of the illicit money that comes from illegal mining. That fuels corruption and that fuels all kinds of other bad things and bad actors in the region.
Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, the New World Report. We're headed to Argentina, the major election in calendar year 2023. New candidates, old candidates, and a twist. I'm John Battle.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.